This is Mike Dean. Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the OOR for Big Data Brainstorm session. This is the OOR telecon on August 14th, 2012. Peter, can you bring up my slides?
Yep.
So I thought I'd bring up some slides just to kind of see the discussion, but expected this to mostly be an open dialogue, continuing some of the discussions we've had about big data in the past. Let's go to slide two, Peter.
Right there.
Big data is an important emerging topic. Ontology for big systems was the theme of the Ontology Summit 2012, and big data is certainly a part of that. I think many of us have felt that OOR can make some important contributions to big data, and as I said, this session is intended to really continue the discussion from our virtual panel on May 17th, as well as some of the intervening discussions and so forth. Next slide. So I listed here a couple potential discussion topics. One thing that I thought might be helpful in case other folks aren't familiar is to introduce a couple supporting technologies that I that were fairly big topics at the Semantic Technology Conference back a couple months or so ago. Second, I think it might be useful to think about OOR essentially in a larger big data environment in terms of what some of the other services might be provide that OOR would need to work with. Hopefully we can actually get to some concrete steps that we can take to move forward, both sort of programmatically in terms of connections with other activities and other particularly some of the emerging Ontolog series, and hopefully also some technical areas that we can address within OOR. Next slide. A couple of things I wanted to kind of mention that I think are potentially quite relevant to big data and really are in sort of emerging status. The first, it relates to relational databases, and there are two candidate recommendations coming out of the W3C RDF to RDB to RDF working group. These are basically standardizing ways of accessing relational database content from the semantic web. And there's a series a workshop that was held before the working group started, and the working group I think has actually been working a couple years at this point. So there's two main styles that are supported here, and the working group is supporting both of them. One of them is called R2RML, that's the RDB to RDF mapping language, and that's designed when you want to actually generally hand construct a nice ontology that represents your relational data model, and then actually do the mapping from the tables and columns into that ontology. The other approach is called the direct mapping, and this is basically an automated approach that you can use to take a relational database schema and expose it as RDF classes and properties. So the ontology isn't likely to be nearly as clean or elegant in that case, but you've got a cheap way of easily exposing the data, and then can use rules or other things to transform it into a more useful or common representation. Both of these, I think, are have progressed nicely. There are some initial implementations that are emerging, and particularly Dan Marenker and Juan Cicada's company has been working on the high performance implementation of the direct mapping that relates to Juan's thesis. And I think this is a technique that can certainly be used for exposing a lot of the big data that exists in relational databases. The other thing that actually grew out of primarily the UK's open government project was what's called the RDF Data Cube vocabulary. And this is an approach basically for capturing information that's typically in, you know, comma separated values, files or spreadsheets, and allowing descriptions of them, including things like units of measure and varying slices of the data that you know, is being applied widely there to a large number of data sets. And I think that this, you know, potentially applies for a lot of the big data sets that that we're seeing, particularly in scientific domains as well. A lot of it tends to be sort of statistical summary data, so things like salinity measures at different water sources by month over many years, you know, for example, would be the type of thing that they're representing. One thing that the current vocabulary is focused on is basically being able to sort of embed the data within a structure. For big data, I think one would probably want to extend it to be able to do what I would call sort of standoff annotation, where you can basically, you know, refer to existing data in place and not necessarily have to mark it up and essentially have some definitions off the side that could tell how to interpret it. And I included some hyperlinks here basically for all of these as well for people that would like to learn more. Next slide. I also thought a little bit about what, you know, other tools, an ontology repository within a big data context would need to work with. And so I think the first two are, you know, things that, you know, we've been involved with already in terms of ontologies and mappings between ontologies. But there tends to also be a need for things like common identifiers, you know, for things like geographic regions or chemical substances or things like that. That's really dealing more at the instance level, typically than the ontology level. But, you know, there's pressing need and, you know, various identifier schemes that have been used in different disciplines like the life science identifiers. In many cases...
Michael?
Yeah.
Michael?
Yes.
This is Todd. Sorry to interrupt, but what do you mean by identifiers?
In this case, typically URIs that you can use for naming things.
Okay, so nothing about, for instance, chemical symbols or protein symbols or whatever?
Those things could certainly be used or could be encoded within identifiers. Although I know, like, for a lot of the chemicals, there actually are, I think, numbered names that they use, basically, with, you know, the chemical abstracts, numbers and things like that.
So these identifiers you said were URIs would be pointing to these common identifiers, and you could always go there and expect them to be resolved properly?
It would certainly be nice if that's the case. Yeah. I mean, I think there are large classes of, you know, large numbers of existing identifier schemes that are out there. And, you know, probably only a small portion of those are actually cast as URIs and are resolvable. But, you know, I think that's the direction that we'd like for things to go. And ideally with the authoritative sources actually maintaining them rather than third parties. So I think in the big data context, you know, a lot of folks are going to be interested really actually in the instance data, in the data specific, the data itself, rather than just the meta model for the data. So I think that the data repositories are going to basically need to be able to deal with very large volumes of data. You know, hopefully would still have links basically to the data models that they use. So another thing that kind of came up in some of the NSF meetings that we've had for Interop is the use of, I guess, what you might call service registries. So being able to find different services that can be applied to data. This could be analytics, could be visualization, it could be other things. And actually essentially tying them to the data model that's used by those tools. And, you know, with ideally with enough precision and description to actually do automated transformations, say from, you know, metric to English units or scaling or things like that. So I think there's multiple types of multiple levels, I think, of registries, in terms of models, instances, and services that are potentially relevant here. And let's see, I think, is there another slide, Peter?
No, this, I believe, is the last slide.
Right, I think that is. So the next topic, I didn't really see that, was basically, what our further next steps might be. So.
Michael?
Yes.
I posted a question on the chat board. In terms of these supporting technologies and the big data ecosystem, how, from the architecture perspective, either IT or the data architecture perspective, how does some of these supporting technologies fit in? Is it just a mediation layer, or is it embedded further down?
I'd say a mediation layer is probably a good way of characterizing it. A lot of the linked data cloud is already in relational databases. So, in essence, what the RDB to RDF working group do is standardizing those interfaces, or you might even say commoditizing those interfaces, so that there's less variation among them.
When you say relational database, you mean SQL based?
Yes.
And of course, the problem with linked data is no one can understand the links, even though they're there. That is, you can't really do much unless a human gets in the loop to figure out what the terms in the link are meaning or how they might be interpreted.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Hopefully we're, common vocabularies can help with things like that. Certainly there's been a lot of misunderstanding of things like OWL same as, for example, between data sets.
Yeah, how do you translate the constraints and triggers and things of a relational DBMS, of a SQL-based DBMS, into RDF?
Right.
Where much of the logic is in an RDBMS.
Right. So typically, I don't think that the triggers are really captured. It's mostly the primary key and foreign key information, and then typically tables of classes and properties as columns as properties. So again, it's focused at this point on read access to data, where not write access to data as well.
But the triggers and constraints aren't just for purposes of controlling the updates. They're also for informing the query retrievals.
Right. That's a good point. And even things like views, essentially, could be. I think typically they deal with views essentially just as if they were tables themselves. But you could also view views as a mapping, between models.
May I prompt everyone that when you discuss something or ask a question to try helping capture that into the chat? And hopefully capturing the answers or the discussion, the gist of the discussion along with it, if you please.
So one of the things I think we had talked about earlier was kind of a notion of having a ontology repository that had some of these user data source ontologies as well as more domain ontologies that are somewhat prettier and more sophisticated.
Now, when you say data source ontologies, you mean the ones that are kind of extracted on using the technologies in slide 4?
Right. So something that was produced, say, by the direct mapping, which mm-hmm. just essentially used the raw table of column names and things like that.
Is it the case that a lot of these data sets in the big data world have these kind of ontologies associated with them?
Well, I think that's a question. I don't necessarily have a sense of how much of it is relational data. You know, my sense is that most of it is, that more of the data is, you know, comma separated values type data than in relational databases. But I think that there's probably a significant portion that's in relational databases as well.
Yeah, and I guess our opportunity is that the LOD, the linked data people, go at best would go through the exercise of extracting a vocabulary. Our opportunity would be, I mean, where do we take it from there to provide an ontology and value-added services on top of that, or even if the vocabulary is not available, given the data sets, what can we do that would make a difference?
Yes, something I was wondering about, Mark Bennett here, was how you manage the relationship between a data model that underpins your SQL database and an ontology of actual things. You know, do you have like an ontology of the data model, which is an ontology of some design? So its model theory is that the things in the model correspond to data elements rather than things in the model corresponding to real things in the domain of discourse. And how do you manage the relationships between those?
Yeah, I would strongly encourage us to kind of focus on the latter part there, where we actually have ontology for that domain and then show how that corresponds to the data in the data sets, the relations, et cetera, within the data set. When you start getting ontologies that model the information resources that model a domain, you get detached from reality too quickly.
But Michael, I think as Michael Dean pointed out, initially we can expect that the ontologies will be very tightly coupled to the underlying RDB data model.
I'm not disputing that, because long as there's kind of like a set of relations that are there, it's when you start modeling the information model, you get that, like Mike Bennett was just saying, but I think you get that indirection from reality too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a large extent, the RML is essentially the, you know, defining the mapping at the information level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can, you know, reuse and perhaps, you know, build on that without having to invent a new one. And so I mean, certainly the that was influenced, you know, fairly heavily by DataRQ coming from the University of Berlin, which, you know, has been widely used as a tool for exposing relational data.
So the OOR would play the role of the repository for any or one of these various types of ontology artifacts that would come out. Is that correct?
Well, it could. I mean, one thing I'm a little concerned about is that these are generally pretty ugly ontologies and not things that you would want to, you know, hold up as examples. So,
but,
you know, they. But on the other hand, if they're reflecting real data that people are using, maybe that's compensating.
Well, you know, again, I think you're going to have a layered approach to the architecture of the ontologies themselves. In order to get access to the data, you got to start somewhere. And since we know it's difficult to develop a good ontology, providing access, I think, is the first criteria. And then trying to massage the ontology for the data may itself require several layers of indirection, at least more than one, anyway. And if we can support all of those various layers that need to be there until such time as the ontology for the original data set is improved substantially, I think that's a good thing to try and achieve.
Are there a couple of a couple of data sets that kind of have high impact to kind of use as a case study here, right? So
high impact to who, Michael?
Sorry?
High impact to whom?
To anybody that we need to convince. In the sense of picking a couple of these data sets and, you know, looking at the ontologies that have been kind of extracted using the technologies in slide 4 but also kind of looking at, well, what would, you know, if Mike Dean's saying, well, these are kind of ugly ontologies, they kind of say, well, what would be, a better ontology? Are there any that we have kind of currently in any OOR instance, or that we know about and we could get into an OOR instance? A couple of concrete examples here.
Mike Dean, are there any geospatial data sets around that could be played with that might meet Mike Rudiger's criteria?
There's certainly things like geonames,
I meant raw data sets, whether it's cadastral data or hydrographic data or oceanographic data or fish data. I don't know.
There are some. So USGS has actually published some data sets, as linked data, using GeoSparkle recently.
I guess this is a convenient point to put in a plug for the upcoming Earth Sciences Ontolog mini-series. For those who aren't aware yet, I mean, that's coming up fairly soon. There's a kickoff session coming up in about 10 days, next Thursday. The series will last between that kickoff until December, when we will probably be more focused on the next ontology summit. But in the meantime, I mean, this is something that's put together between the NSF EarthCube project, Ontolog, SOCOP, and IAOA people. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, there will be real life opportunities that we could tackle some of the issues. That's why I think this is a great session if we are looking for something to really get our hands dirty. That mini series and the spin offs from that probably would provide a lot of opportunities and challenges for us to really try those stuff.
Right, so like what would be then a good data set to choose then? One of these USGS data sets, and see how it kind of corresponds with some of the ontologies that are coming out of SOCOP, that sort of idea, or?
Yeah, I mean, the specific USGS things I was thinking of there are primarily being done by folks that are, looking at semantics. So it would probably be better to try to find some in the wild.
Okay.
That haven't been influenced yet, but... another set I was thinking of, as you were asking, was there's some large data sets in the linked data cloud. Uniprot is one of them. That's a protein database.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a good example. I don't remember specific. I remember that being very, very large. I don't actually. I'm not completely sure it's in a relational database, but I suspect that it is. And I think there's also a couple. Gene databases that are there might be good examples.
Some of the earlier talks we saw in the Ontolog forum on big data kind of look at a lot of municipal data sets.
Mm-hmm.
How available are those, I wonder?
There's certainly, if you look at data.gov or data.gov.uk, there's a lot of data sets which are mostly CSVs or spreadsheets. I mean, I think data.gov is on the order of hundreds of thousands anyway.
Yeah, data.gov is like 450,000 data sets.
Okay.
So it's huge. I mean, I don't think we would be at a loss looking for data sets. It's cleaning them up, scrubbing them, and getting the wrapping the ontologies around them and providing the value add that is going to be the challenge.
Right, and I'm just thinking like we identified a nice domain, the low hanging fruit idea, we're not going to solve all the problems, but if this could serve as a nice little test case, use case scenario to show other people how, you know, what is the benefit of having ontologies, ontology repository in doing things with these data sets.
Yeah, the friendly folks are definitely, I mean, who has already collaborated with us would either be the Earth Science Geospatial group of people, or let's say the government data people, or I guess given our lineage, I mean, with the bioportal and so on, the biomedical. But I mean, biomedical is probably researched and worked at, I mean, it, with great focus and a lot of funding by people like NCBO, OBOE, and so on. So geospatial and government data definitely would be among the ones that we should sort of tackle, I guess.
Right.
Hey, Mike?
Yeah.
Mike Dean? I'm at data.gov now looking at some of their data sets, and the actual data themselves are just these interesting sequences of numbers looking like integers, but they do have these metadata files in XML, and they have all sorts of keywords in there. And I gather this is the standard format for data.gov. In that, they list the data set, and they have, you can get details about it, you can actually get to the data, and then talk about the metadata. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because the data itself, a lot of the scientific data is just literally a sequence or a set of floats, doubles, or integers with no heading information, and you have to go back and look at the metadata to look at the structure. So being able to, or only having to look at the metadata to figure out what the mapping should be would be a lot easier than actually having to look at the data.
Right. So that, you know, those types of sequences of numbers is what I refer to as, you know, comma separated values, or, you know, I think
there'd also
be a lot of spreadsheets there. And I think some of them have headers. It certainly doesn't surprise me that a lot don't, and kind of just refer to external metadata. So my impression was, at least early on, they were sort of just viewing it kind of as a dumping ground for data without too much standardization of metadata formats. But hopefully they're moving toward, you know, some more structure in the metadata. In the UK, they're actually publishing, the government itself is actually publishing a fair amount of data in RDF format. In the U.S., it's been more third parties like Jim Hendler's group from FBI taking the existing, you know, the initial input formats and then converting them to RDF.
Okay.
But there is a fair amount of RDF data available as well.
So we're not interested in that, right? If it's already in RDF, then they're a step very close to having an ontology.
Well, I don't know. I would actually say I think that that's, you know, an important kind of emerging set. And, the level of description may still be quite simple, you know, compared to what you could actually, you know. So being able to map, you know, the classes that they use into a larger ontology would probably expose a lot of additional interesting relations.
Oh, right.
The other thing that I certainly could imagine is being able to do links across data sets. So you're looking at, you know, average rainfall in a county that has some, you know, other characteristic that's coming from some other data source or something like that. Kind of comparing, you know, rainfall to GDP or whatever, you know, as an example. It gets interesting.
Well, that's the promise of linked data.
Right.
But again, there's going to have to be this sequence of or levels of ontology refinement or quality or goodness, whatever term you want to use. But in terms of OOR, I gather there's a collective agreement that we want to support all of these variations on ontologies independent of quality.
I think it's a question. I don't know if there's consensus on that. And I think there's a question kind of in terms of formats of these things as well as the content there. So I mean, we could certainly import, you know, the translate RDF schemas easily. Whether we want to take UML diagrams or ER diagrams that are typically used for databases, you know, and represent those directly, or whether we want to let somebody, let some other repositories take care of that type of information.
Well, I don't think you want
to... Go ahead, Todd.
I don't think you want to deal with UML directly unless they can, you know, translate it into something that's one of the representation languages that OR supports. Ken?
Yeah, I mean, they're really two different kind of issues here regarding big data. One of them is that you might have one source of data which is got huge amounts of data and it's very complicated. Some, like the Sloan Digital Sky Survey comes to mind, which I think they claim that it has more data in it than was acquired by astronomers in all of history prior to the survey. So obviously this is big data, but it's just one data set in a sense. Then you look at data.gov, which has nearly 500,000 data sets. And I gather that most of those are just CSV files. So here's a kind of the reverse situation where you have relatively simple files, each of which, of course, has, you know, it's kind of complicated to figure out what it means, as we've been discussing. But in that case, if we tried to put it into the OOR, are we saying that we'd have 500,000 ontologies in the OOR?
Well, why not?
So this, I mean, that really brings up an issue of just how you would manage so many ontologies. I mean, that's where the big data issue comes in. And, you know, I mean, compare it with, say, Sloan Sky Survey, where it's just basically one ontology.
Well, that's just one.
And it's just one data set.
Yeah.
But it's a huge data set, where these are simple data sets, but an enormous number of them.
Right. But I guess one of the points that might be argued is that if we allow these ontologies from these very small data sets to accumulate, people might recognize, oops, well, maybe I should be using that as my data model instead of what I'm currently doing. And, I mean, the whole idea of having the repositories was to be able to share these things. And if people want to make use of the data, then having access to an ontology that represents the data better than the standard data model, I think, is a useful thing.
No, I agree that it's useful. It's just two completely different problems. That's the only thing I'm trying to figure out here.
I guess I'm confused. What are the two problems then, Ken?
Managing large numbers of ontologies that are relatively simple, or relatively small data sets versus a very looking at complicated but very large and only a few ontologies.
Well, but for the OOR, who cares about the data sets? Now, if there's lots of ontologies to deal with, that's an issue of scalability of the OOR, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So what are we looking at here when we say what's an example of a big data?
Stuff coming from CERN?
Yeah, I think both types that you mentioned. Actually, Ken, that's salient. If you could capture that later onto the chat, that would be nice.
I'm just pointing out that these are really different problems.
Absolutely, yes.
And, you know, in terms of what the OOR would offer, they're rather different. You know,
yes. It comes back to the fact that any application has an ontology by default, even if it's not documented. So having the ontology of the individual application or the ontology of the individual data source is one thing, and having the ontology of the domain of the subject matter is another thing, and being able to map between the two is ultimately what somebody's going to want to do in order to do anything practical.
And hopefully it's something we can provide from OOR.
Yes. Along with leadership in this area, because I think a lot of people out there are just putting things in OWL and calling them ontologies. I could be wrong.
No, unfortunately, you're correct, Michael, on that point.
So, So Mike, Dean, should we go back to your sort of partitioning of the discussion and maybe systematically go through, I mean, what are the technology issues that we might be looking at that are different from what we have been talking about over the last 4 years in the face of big data, of course, and so on. And then, I mean, the ecosystem issues or standards issues or whatever. So maybe break it down for the discussion?
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, one piece of that, you know, I think we have, you know, we've talked about several ways of representing mapping, you know, using languages like Swirl and Rift in particular. And, you know, for better or worse, I think RML is probably another mapping language that is potentially relevant to us. That's probably a little bit on the horizon still. We probably wouldn't want to do a lot, you know, until it comes closer to rec status. But so I think that's one aspect there.
Well, maybe shall we sort of focus for the next 10 minutes or whatever, just on supporting technologies. What is different? I mean, evidently the applications developers see a lot of difference. I mean, efforts around Hadoop or MapReduce and so on. So by the way, I just learned fairly recently that Ken Bukowski actually invented MapReduce. Maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
Start by that's what is MapReduce?
MapReduce?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I actually invented that 1993, several years before Google came along, and now it's the way they do their searches. And they were the ones that came up with the term MapReduce. I didn't.
What did you call
anyway,
it?
Huh?
What did you call it?
I didn't really have a formal name for it. I just thought of it in terms of scattering and gathering.
Oh, there's your problem, marketing.
Yeah, Mark, I should have had a better...
The name is everything. I knew a guy who invented the concept of intranet once and didn't have a name for it.
Oh.
But again, doesn't MapReduce go back to the stuff that Gallerna did in the 80s? With what did
Mirror Worlds?
Say again?
Mirror Worlds?
No. With distributed.
With Lynda.
Yes,
I know all about Lynda.
See Lynda,
yeah,
right?
That's really quite different.
It is? Okay.
I mean, at the time that I was that first developed this, I actually was in contact with Gallerner. So it was pretty clear that what I was doing was very different. But, the idea is that, you know, that a lot of this data is just not suitable for the usual relational techniques. So you had to come up with new methods for doing search and retrieval. When I was doing this, I was actually thinking in terms of ontology. I was thinking in terms of triples and how you would do searches for very, very large triple stores. So that was my motivation. Actually, the fact that it could then be used for just, you know, simple word match type searches that Google then did came as kind of a surprise. I just assumed that there were better ways of doing it, and then when I discovered that, hey, you know, you could use it for this other thing, for just the usual search, that was quite nice. But let's see. So I put there on the chat room the two different I think, that different problems where you have relatively simple ontologies, but a lot of them, versus relatively small number. I mean, I guess BioPortal is just a few hundred. But they can be very complex, where you have a single ontology with millions of concepts. So what are we thinking of when we say big data and ontologies? MapReduce certainly can be used for both of these. I mean, it's quite a flexible technology.
Are you speaking from the context of OOR or something else, Ken?
Well, the usual way that, I mean, the usual way that that people use MapReduce nowadays is with Hadoop.
Right, but again, is that the use of those things, that's using an ontology to do something together with Hadoop, MapReduce, or whatever, right? Or is that something that needs to be introduced into OOR to be able to make use or find or search these multitudes of ontologies for small data sets?
Right, I'm suggesting that would have to be something we would add as a new module to
help
OOR.
But which capability would it help support in OOR?
Search.
I think I'm confused about that.
Search. The idea is that if you do search, say, Sparkle-type search, I'm not sure to what extent that, a Sparkle endpoint can scale up to big data. But it's something
Who cares about big data? Again, is this... I thought we were concerned about the ontologies that would be used for dealing with big data, not big data itself. I guess I'm missing something here.
But it's both. Suppose you have, millions of ontologies, and now you'd like to search to find, you'd like to find commonalities among them. You'd like to search for an ontology that's similar to what you're doing. I think it was Peter who said as we start building up a repository of many ontologies, people will stop reinventing the wheel and start using other ontologies. But that means searching for them.
They won't stop reinventing the wheel and start using other ontologies when you're considering the ontology of the data model itself, because the data model is already there, and so it already has its small but focused ontology. I think where people are going to not want to reinvent the wheel is in the big domain ontologies like BioPortal and so on, which have millions of concepts that aren't dedicated to one particular application or one particular database.
But no, Michael, if you were going to create or you got a grant to do a new experiment or run something, if someone's already got a good ontology that supports your data model, wouldn't you want to try and use it if you knew about
it? Absolutely. If you knew about it, yeah. And if you wanted to use the ontology as your top-down design or departure point for even doing your data model design, that's the ideal situation when people actually understand the role of an ontology as a conceptual model and not just as a cool new application. It's a very minority point. Not many people understand it, but I think that's very, very important if you can get that idea to stick.
Okay, so I guess we need a marketing department.
No, I mean, the idea is that you have like 500,000 of these data sets already in the in data.gov, and presumably, that those are increasing exponentially over time.
Well, the real question and challenge for us is all these governments like the UK and the US that have been sold on semantics and semantic technology when they're really talking RDF triple stores and identity management, are they aware of the role that ontologies can play in designing new RDF open government data sets so that they actually take an ontology off the shelf out of OOR and use it to inform their new data source rather than just hacking from the bottom up as they might otherwise be tempted to do?
I think you should really capture that, because that's an excellent way of expressing the challenge.
Yes, I mean, that absolutely is a marketing issue, but I think we have more than just marketing issues. There are real technical issues also.
Well, no, I agree, but I think you've really captured exactly what the challenge is for OOR, which is to make OOR sufficiently known and usable that the people who will develop new data sets will actually use it.
Yep. I totally agree. Yes, I mean, it's a challenge for OOR, a challenge for formal ontologies, challenge for the next major breakthrough. I mean,
right, but there's two different kinds of uses, I think, that just came up in this last few points. One is the using, say, existing ontologies as maybe found in the OOR to help with existing data sets, you know, whether it's doing integration or decision support or whatever, or, you know, data quality. But the other one was, I thought I heard somebody say, was more using ontologies to design the schemas for new data sets, or to kind of using ontologies to redesign the data sets effectively. So, I mean, those are two different applications that we'd be looking at, quite distinct.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
could you capture that as well? Yes, please.
So, one spin that actually might be interesting, and I haven't thought about this, but you know, a lot of organizations are now moving to the cloud, you know, for various reasons. And in some cases, they're trying to actually replace existing relational databases with Hadoop-based implementations. So, I'm wondering if there's a role for ontologies in guiding some of that mapping. I mean, sort of figuring out, for instance, which attributes are, you know, good for distributed hash table keys and things like that, and more than kind of just declaring it, but actually, you know, doing some analysis of structure.
Yeah, well.
Actually, that leads to another question, Michael. Ken, maybe you can answer this, or someone else can. I don't know enough about MapReduce and or Hadoop to answer this question. Can ontologies play a direct role in implementations of Hadoop or MapReduce?
Well, I think so. I mean, that was in my original work. I used the term ontology. I talked about ontology as being the basis for MapReduce.
So did you test?
I think so.
So, Ken, were your partitioning functions based partly on the class hierarchy? Was that the way you were doing things, or?
No, it was all hash based.
Oh, it was. Okay.
I didn't make any use of the hierarchical structure. I didn't assume there was.
Okay. So how did the ontology come into play?
Oh. The ontology came into play in terms of what it meant to be a match. I felt that it wasn't just good enough to say that a match meant that, you know, say two words were the same.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that a match could be more than just that. It could be that you actually match concepts linked to other concepts. So you could actually have a kind of pattern match in your in the data that you're looking at. So I considered the basically assume you have a semantic net, essentially linked data, and then you you want to search for patterns within that data. With, you know, assuming you have an underlying ontology for it. So it's a more sophisticated kind of matching technique than just, you know, matching words.
Okay.
Although, you know, even in the case of words, you know, there are things like words can have different inflections, you know, and words can be synonyms to other words.
Right.
You might misspell a word. All of that is used in MapReduce. Google does.
Uh-huh.
But originally it didn't. I mean, originally it was just pure word match, and if you put in the plural, it would give you a completely different result.
Right, so I assume they tend to do stemming and things like that before doing the hash at this point.
At this point, yeah, they go through an initial stage, which is what basically I had proposed.
Okay.
So they move to you know, exactly the architecture that I had envisioned originally.
Sounds like you should request a small royalty for
I patented, or Northeastern patented it.
Ah.
And then sued Google, and Google did settle.
Oh, wow. Oh, very cool.
So they pretty much agreed that I was the inventor, although it's not quite the same as winning. It was just a settlement. They didn't actually admit anything.
Uh-huh.
But now you're independently wealthy?
Yeah, eventually I'll get some money from it. It's going to take a while. And I can't talk about anything like that because it's a confidential.
Mike, Dean, could you capture that application scenario on what Ontology or Ontology repositories could do? I mean, in the Hadoop settings.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Ken could respond to that. I mean, with some potentials,
right,
in some of your thinking along those lines.
Hey, Ken.
Anyway, that was only the first of 10, over 10 patents that I have related to this. There are all kinds of different things you can do with this architecture. I don't know to what extent, you know, people actually do this now. There's all kinds of talk about going beyond Hadoop and things like that. And whenever I check one of these things, it's basically just doing one of my later patents. Two of my patents are British patents. So I don't know. There's still a lot of interesting things that you can do with this MapReduce idea that I don't think people have fully exploited. And again, you know, as I said, the whole idea was to do this for ontology-based data. That was my whole motivation.
So what do we hope we get out of today's brainstorming? What will we be doing differently on OOR after today?
I think we've uncovered a number of use cases that are quite new and definitely worth including in...
By your suggestion, Ken, it appears we need to rethink how search would be executed or implemented.
Yeah, that's the idea. Although I envisioned the MapReduce idea to be kind of the first pass to just take a large amount of data, a large amount of semantic data, reduce it to, you know, filter down to a relatively small amount of data, which you could then apply much more sophisticated algorithms to, like, you know, then you could start doing inference on the data.
That sounds like something the link data gang could use.
Right. That was a cool idea.
Your links to figure out which links are really equivalent or have some commonality.
Right. Anyway, so I always envisioned it as just being the first step in a search process that you still need to do later steps to refine the results that you get.
And you are talking about searching across ontologies.
Oh, yeah, that was always the motivation.
Okay.
Right, data, both the both what they call linked data and full ontologies.
I guess along Peter's line question, are there new, are kind of the issues where we'd be looking at, is it mainly just content you know, like identifying the ontologies and showing how they're applied, which is not really, you know, I think it was repositories, more to do with the content of the repository. Or is there something more along the lines of Mike's slide five, kind of these other aspects of the ecosystem and how OR is related to them? Because my questions earlier actually do seem to be a little more focused on the content of the repository and how it's used.
So one thought I had earlier is, you know, partly as people are building up more data registries and things like that and gathering more data, you know, it's there's potentially an opportunity just because they're redoing things, you know, to kind of have an ontology repository play a role. So one way to think about this might be thinking about the, you know, essentially the links, you know, between the data repositories and data registries and ontology repositories. And trying to kind of push as people are building new data repositories and registries to, you know, include the ontology aspects. Or link, at least links to the ontologies.
So would you consider, let's say, data.gov one of your sort of exemplar data repository?
I think so, in a loose sense, although I don't know how much real search capability there is there. But, yeah, I mean, it's certainly housing a large number of data sets. Although, kind of talking about schema sharing and things, I'm assuming that there is a lot of it that is basically partitioned slices off the same data set. So, you know, the census data, for instance, you know, is probably broken down by, you know, state, and then also by metropolitan statistical area and things like that. So there probably are a lot of sets of data files that all essentially are using exactly the same schema because they're really essentially subsets of a larger data set.
Well, it'd be a good thing to capture in a repository.
Yes, right.
Which is interesting because if right now, well, yeah, right now in the OOR, if I want to put in another version of an ontology, it's a little tricky.
Yeah, so I mean, I think essentially the latest version, you know, becomes the one that's actually searched for and everything, and then the older ones are just kind of there for retrieval, right?
Right, but it's not just, okay, and the versions plus the fact that it's difficult to specify that you have modules of another ontology.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to specify relationships among ontologies in the way that the OOR is currently set up. Because, you know, I'm working on ICOM,
mm-hmm.
And you could think of it either as one big ontology, or you could think of it as being a core ontology and then a bunch of extensions. Because they did want to how do you specify that within the OOR?
Mm-hmm.
We don't really.
I think that the modularity aspect has come up with things like Suite as well, but actually having more intrinsic support for relations between ontologies, I think would be really helpful.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've emphasized in Calore, and I know that the OntoHub people are also emphasizing, is the focus on the relationships between the ontologies and modularity in particular.
Yeah, that would be really, really helpful. I mean, so I imagine a lot of the data sets in data.gov are being produced by the same, you know, you'll have a group of them produced by the same agency. And, you know, they clearly have related ontologies. possibly even a single ontology that, you know, encompasses all of the various data sets. But, you know, more likely it's just a collection of interrelated ontologies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's no mechanism for explaining that or, you know, capturing that in the OR right now.
Well, I guess like the other issue there that's kind of behind it is the application of ontologies for semantic data integration. And the idea that you could reduce data integration to the question of the relationships between the ontologies for the data sets.
Yeah, you should be able to do that.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what you're getting at, isn't it? Or
although it's not entirely true, there are also issues like format. You know, two data sets might use exactly the same ontology, but they're in somewhat different formats. In which case, it's kind of hard to see how you would specify just at the ontology level the relationships between the data.
Right. And that may be where some of the data cube stuff fits in. I think it attempts to address some of the things like units of measure and ints versus floats,
right,
like that.
Ints, floats, units of measure, different image formats.
Right.
Date and time.
Dates, times, oh yeah. A lot of stuff there. That, I don't know, is there, to what extent can we express that kind of relationship in the OR?
Well, no, I mean, the emphasis with ontologies is on semantics. Format mapping is a more of a syntactic issue. Ontologies don't really address that at all.
Right, and yet that's fairly important for big data.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so I think probably there's an intervening layer there.
Yeah, possibly an ontology of the data model structure and the data model primitives that are used to build that structure, maybe.
Yeah, clearly the format itself will change the semantics a lot. You know,
no.
The floating point is different from a 128-bit one. It means different.
Right, so I think this is in many ways analogous to sort of, you know, conceptual to logical to physical data models.
Absolutely. And we should be able to frame everything in terms of that kind of Zachman type of view of the world.
So I think, so to some extent, I guess that level of detail maybe fits more in the data registries, potentially, than something that OR would actually need to hold.
But it's metadata, you must agree.
It is, yeah. Yeah, but I think of it as metadata for a specific data set or set of data sets.
So how would we... So you have the ontology... And then you have another layer, which is sort of physical layer, which is which could be per data set.
Right. Right.
Should that be part of the OR? I mean, is that an interesting use case?
I think it's worth developing as a use case, but I don't see how the metadata of data sets would be part of OOR itself, but it would be vital in showing how to use it in that scenario.
Yeah, showing the relationships and interactions between that and a data repository or data registry.
Should we, and maybe if we distinguish data repository and data, or excuse me, ontology repository from data repository, or is it data ontology registry and data registry? There are a number of terms we need to clarify here.
Yeah. I mean, I think of registry as basically just having essentially the metadata and not the data there. And then the data aspects, you know, being, you know, the data repository being whatever stores the, you know, the Sloan Sky Survey, for instance. And in that case, I assume there's a fair amount of additional information in terms of the encoding of the images and number, you know, depth of pixel values and things like that as well.
They have that as well as tools
that
go with it. So it's more than just the format. It's actually software associated with the format.
So there's, do they actually view it essentially as services that essentially use the data and kind of encapsulate it, or?
I gather the data is in a SQL server. But then they have all these associated, all this associated information and tools.
So if you wanted information on a specific body or something like that, you could go through the interface and, you know, some sort of ID number or something that you would look up different facets about.
I imagine so. I've never actually used it. I just happen to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy enough to go to Wikipedia and find out.
Right.
Or go to their website and they'll tell you a lot.
The one thing I'm actually not quite sure about is the extent that of what is out there in terms of data repositories. Data registries. So my impression is that a lot of the large, you know, scientific endeavors, you know, like the Hubble Space Telescope and things like that, have fairly sophisticated but very specific registries for the data. And, you know, at the services level, you've got things like UDEI, which never really seem to take off. And, you know, are there some general-purpose data registries or repositories out there?
Yeah, I don't know myself. I mean,
DoD is a big schema library.
Right, the DoD has this. Right.
But if one looks at the more recent NSF initiatives, I mean, they're mostly going this way. I mean, Data One on for like Earth observation data. EarthCube now, I mean, for geosciences, and so on. Maybe they have or have not gone into the sophistication of capturing semantics, but getting all the data together to support e-science is the general direction. So soon enough, I mean, at least what Mike would call data repositories and data registries would be all around us.
I get the impression that everybody invents their own when they do.
I believe that's why NSF is funding people so that they don't invent their own, but they work together on them. EarthCube comprises of a lot of organizational, institutional collaboration, as is Data One.
No, what I meant was each domain invents its own.
That's my impression as well, and often it's probably each project.
Sometimes even a given project or, you know, institution, but even if every domain has its own, it's still a lot of variety.
Right.
And they're incompatible with one another. So that certainly would be an issue.
That's what ontologies are for.
Yeah, and that's where we still have a reason to exist.
Right. But when when the NSF, for example, mandates that, you know, they have to include metadata for their data and they have to make it accessible, then they measure success of a project by the number of visits to their website. They certainly don't use interoperability with any other domain as a measure of success in the NSF.
Do they generally prescribe the metadata format, or is it just a set of fields that you have to fill in? Or
I didn't even think. No, I think all they do is say you have to have metadata. That's about it.
I see. Okay.
How you represent it, that seems to be completely domain dependent, even project dependent.
For both the data and the metadata.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know of any particular mandate from the NSF that would be more specific than that. I mean, at least they're keen on having metadata. That's an improvement.
Right, yes.
So it's a start. I mean, their concern was that, you know, data that's out there was be useless because nobody actually knows what it means anymore. But that's still a lot less than being able to interoperate, you know, among different projects and different domains. Peter?
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight the fact that we are like 14 minutes to the end of the session. A few things. One, maybe as a meeting, we could sort of have a unanimous or consensus on the fact that we do want to tackle big data with OOR, and then leaving it to sort of the rest are details that we would need to look at. Two is maybe we talked about what we who we want to team up with. I mean, there are like four now possibilities. Maybe we can pick one, maybe we can pick two, I don't know, that we really want to sort of collaborate with, use the data, use the apply to their use cases and so on. And three, what would we want to do differently after this session in our other workshops like architecture, API, metadata, and so on. And we probably still want to leave like a few minutes, maybe 3 minutes, to lock in at least three more dates. I guess Michael and Ken and Todd have a few dates, event dates to confirm before we lock off. Right?
Okay. I also suggested as an action item we capture the use cases you just identified.
Okay, have we captured everything in the chat? I mean, albeit rather randomly and spread out all over the place?
I think so. It's just...
Yeah, if someone has sort of been taking notes and have a fairly comprehensive list, then please paste it up there. So, over the mic. Get us the consensus.
Okay. I was adding a couple notes to the chat. Let's see. Yeah, I actually added a link there to ICPSR, which is a large collection of social science data over the last 50 years or so. So it actually might be a model or example of a data repository as well. So, Peter, do you want to go ahead and talk about the meeting details, or to make sure we get to that?
Okay, if you want to do that now.
Okay.
Good. So, if people go back to the session page, under 3DUQ. So this we want a date for the next architecture and API workshop, which Ken says he'll give us one today. And we want the next metadata workshop. Michael says he'll check his notes and give us one today. And then we want to establish a date, a choice between the next week or the week after next to do our sort of rethinking strategy on funding. It shouldn't be funding one, it was probably funding N, whatever N is. I don't know why we set one. But let's start with that one. That's easier. As of the last meeting, we agreed that Ken will pick one and then the other one would be a break for all of us. So.
Right. The idea was to make this something of a brainstorming session to discuss, who we should try to approach. My experience with approaching people is that you probably want to wait until fall begins because people are just too scattered and unavailable in the summer. But having a meeting where it's just the core team would be helpful. So either the 21st or the 28th, what do people feel?
I guess we at least a few of us who were there last week, we said both were okay and you can make the call. But I guess we have more people today, so... So anyone has problems with one of those dates to eliminate?
21st is easier to me because I have an alternating call that would have overlapped this call if it had gone ahead.
Either one works for me.
Either one, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, both will work for me too.
Yeah, and it's fine with me, so it sounds like we should do the 21st.
All right, there we go.
Okay.
Got one. So next one, while you're at it, you want to pick a date for the next architecture and API workshop? That will take us into November. Not November, September.
Right, so...
The 4th is booked already, and the 18th is booked already. By Michael, right?
Fourth and 18th, please.
We have left the 11th and the 25th.
Todd, what do you think?
Todd has left the meeting.
Oh, he's left the meeting? Okay.
Yeah.
I was hoping to make that meeting, to emphasize these new use cases that we've been collecting and to work on the, improving the architecture based on these new ideas. So I don't have a... Neither of those. I'm available both of those days. Too bad Todd isn't here to talk about when he's available.
I guess you pick one first.
So the 11th is free? Is that
okay? Yeah, 11th and the 25th.
Make it the 11th.
All right.
So now. I'll write something up then to talk about the various use cases,
right.
and then we'll have a meeting where we discuss how to deal with these use cases architecturally.
So
in an API.
over to Michael. Michael, you already have the content workshop on the 18th.
Right. So I was looking up to see what were the kind of the open issues from the last session. The last session kind of focused on mappings. And although there was a lot of, you know, interest in having a future meeting, it would require a lot more participation from the mapping people, like, you know, Jerome using that. And I'm not sure. I mean, he wasn't extremely enthusiastic at that meeting, although he was interested. And I kind of especially after some of today's comments too, I think a mapping session would be useful. It's just I'm not sure who we would have to participate. That's the only question.
As far, I mean, you have a month and a half to,
mm-hmm.
to work that. So if you picked the 25th.
I see, I'm doing the 18th, though. I guess we tentatively schedule the 25th, then, sure.
Or you can push it into October.
No, it's just we'll tentatively schedule the 25th, and if I'm getting a lot of conflict, you know, like people respond with conflicts, so we might have to move it. But yeah, it's easier to give people a date, say, it's going to happen on the 25th, can you make it, rather than asking them day questions of what their schedule is like.
Right, especially if you have like three or four people that will almost never work. You have to start with the date. So.
Sure, we'll say the 25th then.
Did we do mapping last time?
Or yeah.
So this will be mapping again?
Yeah. Well, because unless people are, you know, interested in other aspects of metadata that we haven't emphasized as much, but just kind of following up from the last session, which was on mapping, there seemed to be a lot of interest with it. And again, it was raised today. So it seems like a reasonable way to go.
Yeah, or things that we talked about today. What would metadata, the whole landscape change now that we're incorporating big data?
Oh, you mean you want to talk about metadata related to big data?
If OR were to serve big data, would metadata change?
That's a possible topic.
Yeah.
That would be a really interesting topic.
Yeah, that's
no idea what we're going to say. But
well, let's say mapping and or metadata for big data.
Sure.
For OOR in metadata in OOR for
sure.
Big data.
Sure.
All right, and that would be the 25th. Okay, I actually will be on a trip that time, but I will make sure we will be able to run the session. I mean, the infrastructure will be there. I mean, maybe I might even be there from afar remotely.
Okay,
but just to let people know, I'm away between the 23rd to the 7th.
I put a question on the chat.
Agreed that big data for OR is primary issue of company.
I meant to put a we in there in the middle.
You can do it sort of correction immediate next line, then I can sort of paste it in to change when I edit the transcript. Please do that so that I don't have to. What do you mean?
I'm just not sure that we ever reach consensus on what we mean when we say big data. I think that the issue for OOR is the complexity of the thing that we're trying to describe, not the size of it. You know, we don't need a terribly complicated OOR to describe the World Telephone Book. Well, maybe you do, but but any large homogeneous data set is not as much an issue as a heterogeneity that you get with many of these data collections.
Is there a related issue that big data, in the sense that we've been talking about it today, is really two things? One is data that's very big, and the other is the big data architecture of Hadoop and MapReduce. And I got the sense that both of these were relevant to what we've been talking about.
Okay, so we don't really have consensus. Good.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I follow.
One thing that might be helpful is to kind of think about different sort of dimensions of bigness. I don't know, in terms of kind of number of models versus number of data instances and so forth.
And the volatility of the underlying ontology, like the census data issue.
Mm-hmm.
Every census collects a different set of facts.
Right.
And has a different set of relationships that it's concerned with.
Right, right. With some continuity, but certainly some changes each time as well.
Okay, I have to get going now. So are we wrapped up?
I think we covered the major topics. Peter, did you have anything else that we needed to cover today?
Two more dates. Do Mike Dean, do you want to do a code development session? I also have one potential for infrastructure session, but I'll hold off on that. I don't think we need one until maybe the next time we hear that BioPortal is coming up, or that we have developed a little bit more code ourselves. So do we want a code development session in the sort of foreseeable horizon? Mike?
Perhaps. I'm trying to partly think about other commitments and I think we can handle a schedule one.
You pushed into like October, mid-October already.
Okay.
How about October 16th?
Okay. Take a quick look here.
If we use the 9th for the team meeting, then 16th maybe?
October 16th should work for me, yeah.
Okay, so
why don't we at least pencil that in?
Okay, good.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Good telecon today.
Yes, and thank you, Mike, for all the preparation work to get us into a good discussion.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, all.